Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
No John Rook today, and you know, what a great day for him to miss. It's such a slow day. There's nothing going on here. Turn the side of your headphones on there, bro. Nothing going on at all today. It's a really slow day.
Slow news day.
It's very slow news day. There's nothing to talk about. So John, you know, decided to take a trip to the White House.
Oh, that's it, though?
Apparently, John Rook is at the White House with Providence College basketball.
That's better than White Castle. I mean,
If he was skipping to go to White Castle. If you want it, by the way. Eric Scalavino here from Patriots Football Weekly, joined by, fortuitously enough, Shalice Manza-Young of the Providence Journal.
Well, I have to ask you, though. I heard that I'm like your second or third choice.
Not true.
Chris Price just told me that he was asked last week.
Not by me. I don't do the setting up. Man behind the glass does.
I was actually trying to spare Eric and get Chris to host the show. If you'd like to host the show for 2 hours, I would take you anytime.
Well, we'll see.
See what you started now?
Well, we'll see.
So,
see, the fandom might not like me after this.
Because then Eric becomes third on the depth chart.
Oh, wow. No. Eric is at the top of my heart.
Thank
so,
you. not only a colleague, but a good friend, first and foremost. So I asked you yesterday if you would come on and spend a little time with us today, mm-hmm. not knowing that you were going to be the person who broke the biggest news in Foxborough today. Well, there's dueling breaking news in Foxborough today.
Yes.
And yours is one half of it. The other half of it is the fact that Tom Brady is a father again, and he talked a little bit about that today.
But we all saw that coming. I mean, the baby can't stay in there forever.
Sure,
so,
right. But I think people had sort of forgotten about that as the season has gone on.
That's true.
And all of a sudden, it's news again.
Right.
But more importantly, you broke a very important story about this team today. Tell us a little bit about it. I know most of us have heard it, but just from your perspective, since you broke the story, what happened?
What happened is that four players were, you know, the team had a meeting. I'm sure they have it every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock to start.
Team meeting, right?
Team meeting. Every guy has to be there and start going over, I'm sure, the game plan for the week and their upcoming opponent, which, of course, this week is the Panthers. And four guys got there late, and Bill Belichick sent them all home, which means no meetings, no practice, and now creates quite the controversy with what's going on with this team.
Well, now, this isn't just happening in a vacuum. The New England area has been hit with a snowstorm.
Right.
It was overnight. There was about, depending on where you are in southern New England, anywhere from about 3 to 4 inches of snow on the ground.
And actually out in Worcester, 8. Not that any of the players live in Worcester, but I've heard it got pretty bad. But
sure.
Obviously I neglected to mention that. But
yeah, but most of us, I mean, you included, I'm sure, were late getting here to the stadium today.
I was late. I was
all
stuck
behind
a plow.
All of us in PFW were late getting to work today. Because the roads were just not plowed, and mm-hmm. the highways were slow, and people were skidding all over the place. And if you're on a hill, people were trying to get up and couldn't make it, and people going down were skidding out of control. So it's not like four players just decided to be
exactly,
you know.
And I know for sure that
disrespectful
at least
or
one of the
irresponsible.
Players exactly, and I know for sure that at least one of the players called to give the coaching staff a heads up to say, you know what, I might be late because of this mm-hmm. traffic today, and that wasn't enough to give him, you know, to give him a chance to stick around this afternoon and get going. I mean, I've seen people say, and of course everybody's going to say this, is, you know, why didn't they leave earlier? Well, we don't know. Maybe they did leave earlier. You know, maybe they did give themselves an extra 15 minutes, 30 minutes to get here on time. And depending on what streets you have to take, as you said, there were spin outs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get stuck behind a plow or, I mean, even if you're driving a big SUV like a lot of these guys do, you can't drive around or over or through a plow. So
right. Unexcused.
That's the way these things happen. So, you know, it's definitely obviously Bill trying to make a statement.
Well, that's the first thing that came to my mind when I heard the story was my first assumption was that it was weather related.
Right.
So I think we can – I mean, you said at least one. I'm assuming that the other three, that was – what the issue was, so we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. If that's the case, what kind of message is that sending at a point in the season when things aren't going too well for this team? How does that help morale-wise?
I don't understand how it would help. I mean, but, you know, obviously I'm not the one who is paid to coach this team and make the decisions for this team. You know, the other thing is there's also an element of it's dangerous out there. So why would you send the guys right back out into that weather? Mm-hmm. That's me maybe talking as a mother or whatever. But, you know, this is it's
figuring
the weather.
Since they're already here.
Right. Since they're already here, slap them on the wrist, something, some other slap on the wrist maybe.
Fine of some sort.
A fine of some sort. Maybe sit them for the first quarter this Sunday. But, yeah, it's really surprising to me. And especially, you know, Randy Moss is a captain. Derek Burgess and Adalis Thomas are starters slash key contributors. Gary Guyton has been a starter and a key contributor to this defense as well. So, you know, these are four guys, I assume, because of the four guys that they are, that Bill thinks it will make a statement that
this type of stuff is not going to be tolerated.
It
certainly makes a statement, but I mean, how is that statement going to be interpreted
exactly
by the other
and that's, that
49 guys
be,
on the team?
That remains to be seen, I think.
Okay, so good work by you.
Thank you.
On getting that story. I mean, as is journalistic protocol, we never reveal who our sources are, but I'm assuming you had a source.
I did have a good source.
A very reliable source who helped you to get that. So very good job, and kudos to you for doing that.
Thank you.
Will you tell us the source off the air?
We'll see.
She's not going to tell you anything.
I'm not telling anybody.
Oh, really?
Well, what could this do me?
Uh-huh. Oh, because I know you, and I know where you would go if you had that information.
Never.
Sure.
No,
okay.
I got to protect the people that are good to you.
As would I, if I were in that situation. So we just came back from practice, too.
Yep.
And as we alluded to before, Tom Brady's wife, Gisele Bündchen, had their child.
Mm-hmm.
It was yesterday, technically. He talked about it a little bit in his press conference today. It was born yesterday, so before midnight, but I guess it was late, or so there was some question as to whether it was late yesterday or early this morning. It was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But he was here bright and early, groggy, clearly.
Right. Yeah, he looked pretty tired.
He admitted he didn't get much sleep, but he said everybody's doing fine. It's a baby boy. But he was here today, and he made several times he emphasized that he was here because his teammates needed him to focus and to be prepared for the Panthers coming up, and that, you know, he didn't want to, you know, as a leader and a captain, he wanted to be here mm-hmm. for the start of the work week. And we get out to practice, and there's no Tom Brady.
Right.
What did you make of that?
I mean, we've seen Randy Moss get practices off on Wednesdays this year, simply, I assume, as a veteran's type of day off because he is getting older. He relies on his legs maybe to just keep his legs fresh. We've seen Randy get time off, but he has been here for the meetings on those days. So maybe Tom got the same type of courtesy that he was here for the meetings this morning, installation of the game plan. Obviously, he knows the offense.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he got to either go home and rest or go and be with his wife if she's still at the hospital, which I assume she is. So, you know, I mean, it's not something I personally would read too much into.
I just find it curious that you go out of your way to say all these things about how you have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's time to practice, you're not there.
You don't trust Brian Hoyer?
He and I share a similarity,
yes,
facial characteristics, so I can't really say anything bad about him. But I just thought it was just kind of odd that he goes out of his way to say how much he had to be here. And I don't blame him at all. Trust
right.
me, I'm not giving him any. I'm not giving him any slack for going. And if that was the case, we don't even know why he wasn't there. He could very well be there right now for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
We're only there for the first 10 or 15 minutes of practice. But, I mean, I'm even surprised he was there this morning, to be honest with you. But
and
the
and
fact
maybe,
that he went out of his way to say he needed to be here and then wasn't there just kind of struck me as a little, well, what's going on here?
I wonder, do you think that maybe the fact that Brady was here this morning after becoming a father, let's say at 11 o'clock last night, the fact that Brady was here on time this morning and those other four guys, do you think that played a role in them being sent home? I mean, because Belichick could easily say,
possibly.
Hey, Brady became a father 7 hours ago, 8 hours ago, and he's here.
Possibly.
And you guys couldn't,
I don't know.
Couldn't get here on time.
Tom's busy. He doesn't need to be chiming into this. It's possible, but it's just, I don't know. My gut feeling tells me that this isn't going to go over well with the other players on the team.
And I agree with you.
That's just a gut feeling. And I don't know. I haven't spoken to any of them about it, but I can just only put myself in their shoes and mm-hmm. think, okay, things are going really badly right now, football-wise.
Right.
and then you do something like this, what does that do for the psyche of the team?
I agree with you. I don't think it's if I was in charge
and,
of this
and again,
team,
we don't know
don't
all
think,
the we don't know all the details.
Exactly.
We don't know why the other three were late. You know, one of them says that it was weather related.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly why the other three were. We can only speculate. But so there's I'm sure there are other facts
know,
that we don't
all four
know about.
Of them were weather traffic, you know,
right.
weather
so,
and traffic related. So
for all we know, there was a legitimate, you know, discussion about this beforehand, and maybe they knew about it and still went, and were late. We just don't know.
Right.
But all we can do is give our initial reactions and our, you know, how we think we would feel in that situation, and it just.
And I agree with you. I mean, I don't. If I was the coach, I would not have made that move. I would have found some other way to punish them, as you said, fine them, maybe bench them for the first quarter of the game this Sunday. You know, the Panthers aren't exactly the Colts or the Saints or some, you know, a big time opponent that, you know, that you would necessarily be worried about benching those four guys against a team like the Panthers. But this is a very
but the way things are going,
Shalice, it's a very interesting time for this team that they've lost two straight. They've lost three out of four. They cannot win on the road. They can't close out games. They're already, you know, Tom Brady, and I don't know if we'll talk about this at another point as well. Tom Brady is on his post-game press conference. He was on WEEI on Monday morning talking about questioning the toughness of his teammates. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to be unified at this time, mm-hmm. and they all need to figure out what the heck is going on here that they can't get W's at the time when they need them most,
mm-hmm.
and at a time when traditionally in recent years we've seen them get nothing but wins, than to have guys looking at each other and maybe even questioning their head coach.
Yeah, he talked about it a little bit again today and sort of I think he kind of was trying to backtrack a little bit from the toughness of his statements the other night, at least how the perceived toughness of his mm-hmm. statements. I think we all took it as to mean that he was sort of calling his teammates out a little bit. And I think he tried to walk that back a little bit today when the subject came up again. But, you know, I'm not sure it has anything. I mean, he obviously is closer to it than we are, but I don't know if toughness is necessarily a factor. It's just, I'm not sure they have the playmakers that they need
right.
to get done what they need to do.
I think it's the playmakers and, you know, I think it's some of the plays that they're running. You know, it's, they're doing things that we haven't really seen them do before. That didn't really seem like they blitzed at all against Chad Henne, which, mm-hmm. you know, he's a first-year quarterback. He's making his, seventh or eighth start of his career. Bill Belichick's been known for complex defenses and throwing guys at you from every different angle and never from the same way twice. And my understanding is they didn't install any new blitz packages for the Miami game, which means you didn't give this young quarterback anything that he's never seen already on tape.
I don't even remember them blitzing. I mean, I'm sure they did, but I don't. They happened so infrequently, I don't remember seeing
it. My understanding was they blitzed in nickel package, which coverage is one of the problems, it seems
yeah.
like. So, I mean, the way I see it is you've always seen the front three get pressure or the front seven get pressure, which is why this team could have average cornerbacks because they weren't asked to cover that long. Well, when you're giving Chad Henne, I mean, Chad Henne could have read War and Peace in the time that he was given on some of those dropbacks he had on Sunday.
Yeah, he was.
So if he's
he had
getting
more time,
that much time
than I've seen in a long time.
If he's getting that much time, then average cornerbacks are going to be exposed for what they are. You know, it's mm-hmm. not fair the cornerbacks have to cover for 4 and 5 and 6 seconds. There's only so much they can do.
Yeah. You know, the reaction we get from a lot of our fans and readers is that the coordinators share a lot of the blame for what's
mm-hmm.
going on.
I agree with that.
Or I should say the defensive coordinator and the de facto offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach, Bill O'Brien. I think that's a little unfounded because there's only so much that coaches can do. When they're on the field, the players have to make the plays and follow through the game plan that is given them. If the players aren't able to do that, how is that the coach's fault?
Well, in this particular case, this might be the ultimate team issue. If the players are doing what the coaches tell them to do,
mm-hmm.
but the coaches aren't telling them the best thing potentially to do in every situation, if they might be, for all we know, they might be executing exactly what they've been told to do, but it's just wasn't the right call for that situation.
Yep, I see what you're saying.
You know, I mean, Tully Bantakane was dropping back in coverage in certain situations on Sunday. He's your most effective pass rusher. So if he's not going toward the quarterback and he's following Anthony Fasano or whoever around the field, that's taking him out of what he does best.
I just wonder, because I remember when Charlie Weiss was here, you know, now that he's gone from Notre Dame, we were getting flooded with emails in our mailbag about, oh, should they bring him back and all this. Charlie Weiss took a lot of flack for the play calling, his style of play calling when he was here.
Second,
even when they were winning.
Draw play?
Yeah, I mean, people thought that his play calling was predictable, especially down near the goal line.
True.
People, even when they were winning, Super Bowls, people used to complain about how predictable his play calling was. And either people have short memories or the grass is always greener or whatever it is, people always think that because somebody used to be here,
right,
that bringing them back is the solution.
Well, I mean, yeah, like you said, grass is always greener, or in like a team like Cleveland, if Brady Quinn's the starter, then Anderson's the most popular guy. If Anderson's the starter, then Brady Quinn's the most popular guy in the city. Charlie Weiss, could he, you know, but at the same time, they didn't have the offensive weapons when Charlie was here that they have now. So maybe people look at it in that way, that could he do something different with Randy Moss and Wes Welker and a healthy Fred Taylor and Sammy Morris than he did, you know, when they were Troy Brown and Deion Branch were the receivers. But at the same time, Tom Brady's made no secret of his like for Charlie Weiss.
Sure.
So, you know, if Tom Brady wants him back and Charlie wants to come back, then maybe it happens. I mean, Brady has a contract that ends at the end of next season. Is it totally out of the realm of possibility that he says, you know what, I'll come back if we get this amount of money and Charlie comes back? I don't think it is. You know, it's if he wants to stay here, and I think most people agree that Tom Brady is the one guy that can probably dictate those kind of things. You know, he's the one guy on this franchise who can probably say, this is what I'd like to see happen, and more than likely he can get it.
What's your gut feeling about these final four games? We've had, in the last few years, several instances where teams hadn't been playing well heading into December, but they somehow summoned up the courage, the gumption, the whatever you want to call it.
San Diego Superchargers.
San Diego Superchargers. The Steelers were a sixth seed, won the Super Bowl in 05. The Colts had no defense. Oh, yeah, we always love when they get to play this song. Colts had no defense in 06 until the final month, and then they breezed through the playoffs, won the Super Bowl.
Arizona last year.
The Giants in 07,
exactly,
beating the Patriots. They were not even going to make the playoffs heading into December, and then they went on the run. That they went on, ruined this 19-0 season. Do you think this team is capable of doing such a thing, or are they who they're going to be for the rest of the season at this point?
Up until 4 o'clock on Sunday, I would have said, yes, they'll put it all together, because that's just the type of, having covered this team for 4 years and seeing Brady pull out so many wins and seeing Belichick almost always make the right decision in a key situation, I would have said yes. But seeing them lose that game on Sunday and just the performance that they had in the second half, I think they are what they are. I really do. And that's a team that can beat the teams that they're supposed to beat, but will struggle against any kind of challenge.
Weren't they supposed to beat Miami?
They were supposed to beat Miami. But, you know, yeah, I mean, they were supposed to beat Miami. You're coming, again, Chad Henne. And going into that game, you know, I remember I wrote in my pregame analysis, they have no playmakers without
Ronnie Brown.
And they made me look like a fool because Devone Best looked like the second coming of Wes Welker.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's a terrible combination. When the quarterback has time to throw and the receivers get
wide open, yeah,
it looked like practice.
It did. You know,
it looked like 7-on-7.
It did. I agree.
For most
with you.
Of the game, and it was troubling to watch because
it really was.
You knew what the problem was,
and you know,
got any pressure on that kid
again?
Penny.
If I covering this team for as long as I have, I just in my mind for the third and the fourth quarter, I was like, okay, this is when it's going to happen. This is the play that it's going to happen. This is when they're going to put together, you know, something fluky that we've seen in the past happen that goes their way, or, you know, maybe if there had been a tipped ball. You know, maybe if, you know, Mike Wright gets his hand up at the line of scrimmage, it pops up in the air and Gerard Mayo comes down with it and gives them a short field. Something like that. Or Wes Welker catches the 5-yard screen and turns it into a 50-yard touchdown. I mean, you would think that the Sam Aiken play, amazing catch from him, may have been one of those plays that in the past it's like, you know, those kinds of things only happen to the Patriots. But now they just are not making the plays that they need to. And not just on defense. The offense has been stagnant too lately, which is the really surprising thing.
They're stagnant at the worst time.
Exactly.
I mean, they get hot. Like in the first half of that Miami game, I thought they actually moved the
Brady
ball well.
Was 14 for 15.
He was playing great. The running game was doing what it had to do. And it seems like in the second half, something changes, and it's almost like they seize up and panic. And they start freezing.
It's inexplicable.
You know, it's almost like they get stage fright.
Right. And I don't understand it at all. It's something that I've never seen before from this. I mean, in a couple of instances, yes, but
over an extended period.
Right.
It's been pre-Belichick since we've seen anything like this.
Right.
I think.
And now in a very short amount of time, it's just look at every single road loss they have. They scored 0 second half points against the Jets. 0 second half points against Denver. They had 7 points, 10 points, I'm sorry, on the road in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm.
Seven
against Miami. I mean, 24 second half points, and I think they've given up 83 in the second half of those 5 road losses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really confounding. If it was something you saw once or twice, okay, fine. But to see it over and over and over, and even in the games that they're winning, I don't think in that Jets game a couple of weeks ago, I don't think they scored that many points in the second half either.
No, what was the final of that game? That was...
Was it 31-17?
Well, I think they got a late score at the end, which might have made it look
right
a little bit more. But, yeah, they didn't... It wasn't like they sustained what they had in the first half throughout.
Right. Which you have to wonder, again, something that Bill Belichick's always been known for is making adjustments. Does this mean now that teams are making the adjustments on the Patriots and they don't know how to respond to them?
Well, that's the thing. What I'm hearing when we ask those kind of questions afterwards in the locker room or in press conferences the next day or so, the recurring theme seems to be we didn't see anything different from fill-in-the-blank
exactly.
opponent. Well,
which leads me to believe that they just are what they are and they lack any playmakers and any mental focus. I think there is something to be said for the lack of real leaders on this team, and I think that these guys don't have shared experience to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Teddy Bruschi and Mike Vrabel and Richard Seymour and Ty Warren, when they played together, and Rodney Harrison, they could all be like, you know what, guys, this is just like this situation we had, you know, 6 weeks ago, or this is just like the situation we had in the playoffs last year. Let's just do it again.
Right.
These guys don't have that shared experience.
And I think they have the ability. Most of them have the ability to make plays because obviously if they're getting leads, if they're getting big leads, if they're, you know, getting interceptions, getting to the quarterback, Telly Van de Kane is having a career season statistically. He's leading the team and he's tied for the most sacks in a season that he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Merriweather's picking off passes. Lee Bodden has been kind of steady. These guys can make the plays, but it just seems like they don't have that killer instinct throughout the whole game. Something happens after the half where maybe it's a lack of confidence. They don't seem to believe in themselves. It's hard to pinpoint. Because
at this
point,
it might be a lack of confidence. I mean, but in the past, it's like, would you really – and it's funny. It's interesting because Lawrence Maroney said on Monday, we need to stop living in the past and living in 2007. But in 2007, if they had a 31-7 lead on you at halftime, they were going to get up to 48-7 by the end of the game or whatever it was. They would just keep going.
Right.
So now if they go into halftime with a lead 24-10 or whatever it is,
they don't feel confident that they can hold it, it seems like.
Why is there not that killer instinct even for the offense to just keep going, keep going,
right, keep scoring.
Going. Yeah.
Keep scoring. I mean, that seemed to be the mentality 2 years ago.
Right.
Get a big lead early, like in the first quarter, get up 14, 17, 21. Then the defense can just rush the passer all game.
Right.
But still, in the second half, put up 14, 17, 21 more and get into the high 30s or 40s. And then you don't really have to worry if the other team mounts a comeback because you're already up by too many points.
Exactly.
And it doesn't seem like they're doing that or are able to do that. They can make some plays here and there, but they don't have that. I mean, and they've obviously lost a lot of the people who made those plays before. But I know it's to me, it's a little bit of a, if you want to take a silver lining approach, you can say that a lot of the young players and new players who are getting all this playing time are getting that shared experience now.
Mm-hmm. And but how many of them will be here?
But how many of them will be here next year? And are we just seeing them in their in the young stages of their career here, or are we seeing what they really are? Are they people who can make plays, you know, flash in the pan, or are they going to be legitimate playmakers over the long term? We don't know that now, and it's troubling when you ask guys after the game, you know, what went wrong today? What did you see? And they say, we don't even know.
Yeah.
We don't know what's wrong. Kevin Faulk said, I think it was after Miami game,
mm-hmm.
if we knew what the problem was,
we'd fix it.
We'd be able to fix it. We'd be doing things to fix it. That, in some ways, is even more troubling, because if you have a problem and you know what the problem is, okay, you know, you can go after it. If you don't really know what the problem is,
right,
then how do you fix it?
And as you said, you know, after games, you're talking to defensive guys. After the New Orleans game, after the game against Miami, they didn't give us anything we weren't expecting. Well,
then what happened?
What happened?
Right.
And Tony Sparano unintentionally said something really damning when he was asked about Chad Henne after the game, and he said they basically ran the same plays over and over again.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if, okay, he beats you with it the first couple of times, but the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth time you've seen that same play, you can't figure out how to stop it?
Yeah, it's, I'm at a loss because they're at a loss. And
right. And we're not really, you know, it's not like they're like, hey, gather around.
Yeah, and even if they, right, even if they did know, they wouldn't really divulge
right,
to us exactly what it
us.
Was. But, you know, we've done a lot of talking. We know there are people listening out there who probably want to get their 2 cents worth. You can email us at webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio, all one word, at patriots.com. Give us a call if you want, 508-543-7482. Again, 508-543-7482. Let us know what you think about everything that's going on with the team right now. Brady's new baby, the four guys who were suspended today, that the story that Shalice broke, anything else revolving this team, the Panthers game coming up. I have an interesting question I want to pose to you after the break about Julius Peppers.
Uh-huh.
So send us your emails, give us a call. We'll be back in a minute.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Good bump music, Doc. What do we got here? Who is this?
A song called Number One.
Mm-hmm. By who?
It's escaping me right now.
Is that the name of the band? It's escaping me right now?
No.
No.
Is it Nelly?
I think it might be.
I like it. It's good stuff. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, filling in for John Rook, who's at the White House. Doc, is that right?
Yeah, did you hear anything about this down in Rhode Island about this Providence
College? Shalise Manson Young from the Providence Journal joining
not.
Us.
Why
going to the White
they,
House?
Why would they? Save it.
I think a senator helped set it up or something.
But okay. Usually you get to the White House if you win something.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, they haven't won
PC
anything
hasn't
in a
won
while.
Anything big in a while. I know, because that's my team. My dad went to, my dad's okay. A Friar alum, and so ever since I was a kid, I've been a Friar fan.
Yeah, they haven't won much
And they
lately.
Haven't won much.
And as I understand, yeah. This isn't their year either.
It's always the same thing. They have young recruits who have potential, but they're not a, you know, the team chemistry and all this stuff. And then they have
they
leads.
Need to recruit myself.
They have leads on the road that they lose. Like they played Alabama a couple of weeks ago. They played Alabama down in Tuscaloosa, had a lead at the end, and they kind of blew it. I mean, not a huge lead, but they were still winning.
Sounds familiar.
With a chance, yeah, unfortunately. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482. The phone number, as I said, joined by Shalise Manza-Young from the Providence Journal, who broke a big story today about four Patriot players being sent home when they got to the stadium today because they were late for the 8 a.m. team meeting amidst a snowstorm that was causing problems on the roads for everybody this morning.
Exactly.
And at least one of the players says that it was weather-related, his reasons for being late. We don't know about the other three. We can only speculate and assume that it was weather-related for them as well, mm-hmm. because how often do players on this team, in this locker room, ever show up late for anything?
Exactly.
That's just
not the case. Well, I mean, most football teams, if you're less than 5 minutes early, you're late.
So. Yeah, exactly.
At least in some places.
Right, right. Little housekeeping note here first. In an hour, at 3:30, we're going to talk about the Panthers this upcoming week, their opponent, with Charles Chandler from the Charlotte Observer, mm-hmm. who covers that team. So we'll get a little bit more in-depth about the game coming up, but we still have all this other stuff that's going on today that we needed to get to first. And we'll get to it. We'll get to everything, including your emails. Here's one from Nick in Birmingham, UK, one of our many fans over across the pond. Hey, guys.
I had stayed longer in London.
Yeah, I know. That was my only regret about that trip. I wish we had the full week. But it says, first off, I wanted to say that Shalise is a great guest on the show, and I, for one, would like her to be a guest more often.
Thank you.
I know she may be contractually obligated elsewhere, but her spot on the show should always be open. Fred should consider hiring her full time.
Ooh.
I don't know if she'd want to
come
here full time.
I don't think the boys could handle me on a regular basis.
I don't think so. Anyway, with regard to the team, Nick continues, I would like to discuss some of the draft misses that Belichick has made. Now, I know you can't hit on every pick, but the Patriots have made it a ritual lately to trade out of good draft spots because they did not believe in the talent available. What angers me most as a fan is that the same talent Bill has passed up has gone on and prospered elsewhere, and it angers me even more when Bill seems to speak glowingly of those same players when we play them. As a result, I truly believe that the reason this team has begun to struggle is because of the dropping level of talent on the team. What do you guys think?
I agree. I agree that you can look at the drafts in 2005, 2006, 2008. It's obviously a little bit early to pass a lot of judgment on this year's draft. It looks like it's going to be a good draft class. I mean, even if you know, if you get your starting left tackle of the future in Sebastian Vollmer, if
it certainly has the potential to have laid a foundation for
exactly.
the future.
But and you know, I know what the team line is about the 2007 draft, that you know it may only be Brandon Merriweather that has actually stuck around from the actual college players that were drafted. But lest we forget,
yeah.
we got Wes Welker and Randy Moss too.
Right.
That's a technicality. It's a little bit of spin on the team's mm-hmm. part. But it's, I agree completely. I think that, you know, the drafts that they had early in this decade that sustained them, they haven't really had those the last couple of years.
And this, I think, has the potential to do that. And some of these guys, like you said, Butler, Vollmer, have been forced into, you know, Ingram, long
Myron
snapper
Pryor.
Role, Myron Pryor. A lot of these guys are contributing. And that, I think if you take the silver lining approach, it's that they're getting experience that they would not have gotten at this point had it not been for the fact that so many of these veterans have left.
Right.
So they're getting good experience now that maybe will help them in 2, 3, 4 years. But fans have a what have you done for me now
right.
sort of
well,
approach to things.
Here.
Especially around here when you're used to winning and we're expected. You know, Vegas had this team as the odds-on favorite even when they didn't sign Julius Peppers
right.
to win the Super Bowl this year.
Or Jason Taylor.
Right. But I think everybody, when the Peppers rumors first started, I think people really got excited.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, around the first times we saw a Super Bowl odds for Super Bowl 44,
mm-hmm.
Which leads me to the question I was going to ask you before. And I brought it up at the end of PFW in Progress at the last show. How different would this current Patriots team be if they had signed Julius Peppers? And would we even be having the kind of discussions we're having right now?
You know, I don't even know if we have to do something, you know, talking about, because obviously it would have been kind of difficult for them to swing a deal to get Julius Peppers. How different would this team be if they had held on to Richard Seymour?
Well, I think it would be better, but I think if you had, Seymour wasn't the kind of guy who was going to get you double-digit sacks.
Well, no, but he wreaks enough havoc and he, you know, he takes up enough guys that, you know, Tully Bantakane or Dalis Thomas or whoever they put in that rush position probably would be more effective. You know, I think that Seymour, for, you know, all the whatever faults he has or whatever knock you want to put on him, he occupied guys. And the more guys that are occupied, then the more chances there are for the other guys to get pressure on the quarterback. I mean, it's not even necessarily about sacks. It's about getting pressure on quarterbacks,
mm-hmm. getting them out of their rhythm, forcing them to make throws they don't want to make.
Right,
right. I guess I'm thinking specifically of the losses at Denver at the end there. If Kyle Orton doesn't have the kind of time he has mm-hmm. to make those throws, if you know if there's a Julius Peppers in his face, Denver probably doesn't make a comeback. If Peyton Manning has Julius Peppers in his face.
Mm-hmm.
in those final 5 minutes, I don't think he's making the kind of throws to get and scoring the two touchdowns to get them back in the game.
Right.
And on. You can go on every loss that they've had and say,
as we've said already, Chad Henne
yeah.
couldn't have gotten any.
I'm not saying they would have been undefeated. I'm just saying this team's record would not be 7-5 right now.
Right.
I don't think if they had Julius Peppers.
He may have gotten one or two key sacks at the end of the game or just the right
which
amount
is all that
pressure.
What they might have
right,
needed.
Exactly. And, you know, I do think a guy like Julius Peppers makes a difference. You know, I don't know a lot about him, obviously, but from what I understand, he's kind of one of those guys that kind of you can tell his emotions. He wears them on his sleeve, sort of. I assume mm-hmm. if he came here, change of scenery, different situation, he'd be happier. And
motivated.
And we'd see the best
exactly.
out of him.
I kind of equate it to when Moss came here in 07.
Exactly.
People were saying he was done when he was in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have it anymore. He was a malcontent, blah, blah, blah. He comes here. He's, as he said in his opening conference call, the Moss of old is back.
Right.
And the Moss of old was back.
Oh, yeah.
And has been pretty much back since then. And I think the same kind of thing would have happened if Peppers had gotten here. He would have been on a team that had a legitimate chance, an even better chance with him on board. I think he would have known that, and he would have been the star on this defense. He would probably be leading the team in sacks right now. And even if Tully and Mike Wright and some of the other guys who've gotten their sacks
mm-hmm.
Might still have been able to do that. And we would be thinking completely differently about not only the front seven, but about the defensive backs, because pressure would have been taken off them and maybe
right.
they could take a few more risks. And, you know, it's hard to say that one player would have that much of an impact, but I think in this case, it's not too far-fetched to think of it that way.
And obviously, you know, again, trading for Julius Peppers, because technically, you know, the Panthers, he wasn't really a free agent and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. My understanding was Jason Taylor was almost, you know, was basically signed, sealed, delivered here. So Jason Taylor, another guy, you know, kind of his reputation took a hit. He didn't play that well with the Redskins. Loves Brady, loves Belichick. Could he have made a difference as well? I mean, he's older.
Yeah.
But again, if you put him in certain situations, which is another one of those things that Bill's been known for in the past, mm-hmm. is figuring out what a guy does best and having him do that. So if you know that in second and third down or whatever situation it is, that that's what Jason Taylor does best, have him do those things. And maybe he does the same, does something similar. Now, it's been ramped up again. You're starting to hear again, will Julius Peppers be with this team next year?
With Carolina, you mean?
Will Julius Peppers be with the Patriots next year?
Well, here's the thing. When that was all floating around, people looked at his number, the cap number that he would take up, his contract, and whether or not the Patriots even had room, and mm-hmm. they would have to get rid of so many players. Well, here's my argument. They got rid of a lot of those players. And one of the players I thought might have been included in a potential trade was Richard Seymour.
Right.
Who they ended up letting go anyway. So if you're going to get rid of all the players you got rid of, and you make a one-for-one swap at the position, how come the deal wasn't made? I mean, obviously we're not, you know, it's very easy for us to look back now and second guess
exactly.
what did or didn't happen.
Exactly.
But that's kind of what we do. That's the job
that's
we have.
That's the fun of it.
That's what people, I mean, but yeah, that is the fun of it. Exactly. That's the fun of our job is we get to look and analyze and see, can we put two and two together? Can we connect the dots and say that that was a move that they should have made?
Mm-hmm.
And especially considering what's happening and what has happened throughout the year.
Well, if you consider that they potentially could have traded for Julius Peppers and instead traded for Derek Burgess, who by all accounts has been a disappointment, then yeah, you have to wonder, could they have or should they have tried to make that happen?
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Back to the inbox. This is from Brett from Doesn't Say Where. Here's the deal.
From Parts Unknown.
Yes. Everyone overreacts and says they're going to the Super Bowl when they win one game and then turns around and says the dynasty is over when they lose one. We said it after they lost more than one. That was my little parenthetical. Most fans are fickle and think they have all the answers. The reality is, but one of their losses come down to one play and have been by one score, and they're just not closing out games. The whole season comes down to a few plays. It's that simple. New Orleans played their best game in team history, and New England their worst in a long time. I have no doubt this team can beat Denver, San Diego, Cincinnati, and Indy. Everyone needs to take a chill pill. That's Brett. He's very
Brett,
sanguine
you're a very
about
good
things.
Fan. You're such a good fan, Brett. You really are.
I don't know if I share his confidence.
No, I don't think I do. I mean, especially...
We know you don't, Eric.
Yeah. Well, if you read my commentary this week, you'll see.
I haven't cracked open this week's edition of Patriots Football
Weekly yet. It's basically the same column that Bill Reynolds wrote in yesterday's Projo.
Aha.
So...
Plagiarism?
No, I wrote mine first. His came out yesterday. We write ours before the
Plagiarism
games.
Plagiarism on him.
I don't think he plagiarized because it wasn't really out yet.
Right.
But our paper had just come out. I'll say he's doing his
he's
own
in the
work.
Clear.
But we're thinking, we're like-minded there when it comes to that.
Which isn't a bad person to...
Yeah, he's
Billy's
done pretty
a
well.
Very good friend
he's
of
done
mine.
Pretty well for himself.
Billy's a very good friend of mine.
So, yeah, Brett, I don't think I share your... Your point is accurate. The losses have been by one score or less, mm-hmm. you know, the New Orleans game aside. Most of their losses have been, you know, within reach because they've had the lead and they've lost it at the very end. So if you want to look at it and say that, yeah, they're only one or two plays away, yeah, that's true. But the calling card of this team has been that they make those plays
exactly.
when they need them.
Exactly.
And they have the players to do them. They don't have it anymore. You have to be realistic about this. And, you know, there's still a month left. There's four games left. They could end up 11-5. They could play out the string.
Which,
I just don't have
way,
that confidence.
11-5 is the same record they had last year with Matt Cassel under center.
And didn't make the playoffs.
11-5
will most likely get them the playoffs this
yes,
year.
Yes, but
and even a home
all
game.
The talk about, oh, Matt Cassel. The Tom Brady, everybody thought that, you know, Tom Brady would come back and mm-hmm. sunshine and flowers every day. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, the best they could be at this point is 11-5, which is the same record they had with one Matty Cassel under center. So
now, the Saints didn't make the playoffs last year, did they?
I don't think they did.
So
even though Drew Brees threw for over like 5,000 yards.
Right. Yeah, I think they missed the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. But my point is, in the NFL, things can change that quickly.
Right.
You go from not making the playoffs to now they're 12-0, 13-0. What are they now? 12-0.
12-0.
Yeah. So, you know, is it out of the realm of possibility that this offseason, if New England makes the right kind of moves in free agency in the draft, that they could be right back to where they were a couple of years ago, fighting for this, you know, sure.
Right.
But all we have to look at is right now, and the trend over the last 4 or 5 years is they got into the biggest games and have lost them.
Right.
The playoff game in Denver in 06, you know, in January of 06, mm-hmm. 05 season. The AFC Championship game in Indy,
mm-hmm.
Super Bowl 42.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, last year is, you know, you have to take last year for what it was, losing Brady and all that, and they still fought their way back. Just came a little bit short. But things, these kind of things don't end usually overnight.
Right.
There's usually a progression, a slow progression.
And especially on in
we're witnessing that, I think.
Yeah, in the on the defensive side of the ball. You know, you bring up that the loss in Indianapolis in the 06 AFC title game and the loss to the Giants in the Super Bowl, those games, the defense gave up 70, 80-yard plus drives for the game-winning touchdowns
yeah.
for the opposition.
I mean, the defenses in the early part of this decade used to allow drives that long, but once they got to the red zone,
exactly,
they turned it on,
exactly.
and a brick wall came up, and teams couldn't do anything. They'd get a turnover, they'd stop them, force them to kick a field goal, whatever. That's not happening now. Teams are getting into the end zone. And
you're right.
It's coming down to one or two plays, but those are plays that are happening at the wrong time.
Those are and they're not the plays that the Patriots used to make. As, you know, Brett, do you want to be an optimist? Of course. You know, there are people who have a lot of emotion tied up in this team, and you always want to think because you've seen it happen so many times before. And look, I'll admit it. I was right there with you. Like I said, up until 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, I would have always been like, you know what? The Patriots always have a chance because Brady's at quarterback and Belichick's on the sideline, and of course they have a chance because of
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure anymore. You know, I thought that they could win that game in New Orleans. I thought it would be a shootout. I thought certainly they would give up their share of points, you know, 35 points because New Orleans is just that good offensively, but I thought that this offense had the firepower to match them, you know,
sure.
score for score.
Yeah, I did too.
Obviously, in that game, you were playing without Sebastian Vollmer. I think that game and the game against Miami really showed how good Sebastian Vollmer is,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he's the left tackle of the future for this team. But they just, it hasn't. It's obviously I'm stumbling over my words because this is just not anything we've ever seen before from this team, not in this decade, to be in a situation where they need a score or they need a stop, and time again, it's not happening.
We talked a little bit about the play calling before and the coordinators and their job and the assistant coaches. Eric from San Francisco writes in about that topic. The analysis last week focused on the lack of true third wide receiver options and how that's affected the Pats' options and allowed defenses to focus on Moss and Welker. Granted, Aiken has come on, but he's still a ways from becoming the answer to the loss of Stallworth and Gaffney. The talk then turned to the absence of the tight ends from the passing attack, also a valid point. From watching the games, it appears the coaches have decided to use the tight ends more for pass protection rather than as pass receivers. This may be a reflection of the O-line's inability to provide adequate protection. What has not received enough analysis, in my opinion, is O'Brien's play calling. It is atrocious. When we have the ball with the lead and need to take time off the clock, he'll call two long pass plays in a row or a low-probability running play. The play calling, to me, is the most noticeable deficiency in the offense compared to 2007 and even last year. What happened to the screen play? Or even the dink and dunk, which served as a viable rushing-like play for us to keep the clock and the chains moving? Whatever the case, O'Brien needs to inject some creativity back into the play calling and resort more to the high percentage plays that have worked so often and successfully for this team. Your thoughts? That's Eric from San Francisco.
Love San Francisco, Eric, and agree with a lot of what you said, that, you know, the creativity is lacking. And to me, creativity isn't necessarily doing gadget plays like we saw the flea flicker they attempted a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago. It's not necessarily creativity. But as he said, you know, even the screens and to me, I've noticed lately that every time they're in second and 10, they just hand the ball off up the middle. And that's obviously not working.
Creativity can mean varying,
things up, right?
Varying,
I mean,
your tendencies.
If I notice that on second and 10, you always do a run play, well,
yeah, sure.
You think Greg Williams is going to pick up on it, the defensive coordinator for New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I agree with that he said is using the tight ends, that the tight ends have disappeared from this offense.
They have.
And I do agree with the fact that because
from the passing game, they've disappeared.
From the passing game for the past couple of weeks. And I think it is because Matt Light is back. You know, he took a month or 5 weeks off or whatever it was because of that knee injury. You don't know how rusty he is. Does he need some additional help on that left side? Nick Kazier's had his issues on the right side, not just this year, but he still gets to play. So why, you know, if the tight ends probably are in there to help them protect Tom Brady, and there's only so many times Tom Brady can be hit, and he was hit, I was told, 8 times on Sunday. The stat sheet only said 3, but he was hit 8
looked
times.
Looked like a lot more than three.
I thought it was a lot more than that, too, and you know, I asked somebody, and I was told it was 8 times that he was knocked down. I mean, you can't – one of the things about Brady, we all remember that picture of him at the combine in 2000 and just how thin he is. He's strong,
mm-hmm.
but he's not any bigger now than he was 9-10 years ago in terms of, you know, he's never going to be a thick, stocky guy. He's wiry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's that's a good way to put it. He's stronger.
Right.
But he's not like a Dallas Thomas.
Right.
Who's a brick wall himself.
Exactly. Or he's not, I mean, even Donovan McNabb has a good amount of meat on him.
Dante Culpepper.
For the position. Right.
Yeah.
That's
never going to be that.
He needs to be protected. Obviously, I mean, he started the game with the ever-present right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Then they added the finger.
Mm-hmm.
He left the game after the first touchdown pass because he got planted into the ground and his arm or whatever it was bothering him. I mean, this guy is, by most people's opinion, as long as he can play, this team's going to have a chance. Well, if he keeps getting planted 8 times a game or more, he's not going to be out there for very long.
Mm. Doc looked up the stat. New Orleans was 8-8 last year, did not make the playoffs. So,
and now look at them.
Right.
They have a legitimate shot to go 16-0.
And they didn't make a ton of big name moves in the offseason, as far as I can remember. It's basically the same team. They've had some pieces on defense a little bit through the draft, obviously, but
and I think Darren Sharper and I think Greg Williams. I mean, Greg Williams is very aggressive defensively, and their defense the last 3 or 4 years has been their major issue. And obviously, Greg Williams has made a big difference for them.
Mm-hmm. So it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. That's still the NFL. You can be a horrible team 1 year. 8-8's not horrible, obviously, but you can be not a playoff team 1 year and then be virtually undefeated the next year and be considered the favorite. So, you know, long term, there's obviously still hope for the Belichick-Brady era, but we only have right now to focus on.
Right.
Because it's at that time when it's, you know, playoff seeding is coming.
It's crunch time.
It is crunch time, and it's just, you know, these last four games, when you looked at the schedule in April, May, June, when mini camps were rolling around, the last month of the season looked pretty
like gift wrapped.
Pretty,
hey,
pretty
guys,
easy.
Get ready for
right.
this nice
you
little 13-3
that,
season.
Get through that November stretch of the tough games, and it's smooth sailing. Well, it's not quite smooth sailing now.
No, you can't. You really can't say that. I mean,
I don't feel confident about this game. I mean, I won't feel confident about Buffalo only because it's on the road.
Right.
And they're
who knows
playing
what
better.
The weather is going to be.
And they're playing better than they were.
It does seem like they're responding to their new, the fuel.
Perry Fuel. Right, their interim head coach. Jacksonville's playing sporadic.
Jacksonville is like Jekyll and Hyde.
And Houston, same thing.
Yeah.
So they're ending the season with teams who are, and even Carolina's Jekyll and Hyde in some ways.
But the only thing with Houston, you know, I don't know, you know, we haven't really heard, we're already hearing rumblings that Gary Kubiak could be out of a job. So if he's dead coach walking.
He could, but if they make the play, we heard the same things about Tom Coughlin at this point.
That's
in
true.
2007.
Tom Coughlin's butt was on the line.
Eli Manning was a horrible quarterback, and he was going to get.
Eli Manning's still not very
good.
Coughlin
was going to get fired. And then look what they did. So if Houston pulls something like that together, how do you get rid of the guy?
Right.
Even if they don't make it to the Super Bowl, if they get to the playoffs and win a game or two, then suddenly you don't really have a justification for letting a guy like that go.
That's true.
So, well, I just. But they have Carolina next. That's all they can worry about right now. And I just, as many questions as they have at their quarterback position, and I still just don't I don't feel confident that it's a W. I still think they're going to win.
I don't think,
but I'm not confident about it as I might have been a few weeks ago.
I don't think you can count on anything anymore at this point.
Webradio@patriots.com is our email address here in the playbook. 508-543-7482, the phone number. We're going to take a quick little break here, and when we get back, more of your emails, phone calls if you got them, and a couple of other topics we're going to bring up new. We'll be back in a minute.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape, serving Trace.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Back inside the playbook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly with Shalice Manza-Young from the Providence Journal. Before we get back to football, a couple of little diversionary things, because we've been talking a lot of serious stuff for the past hour. And it's the holidays, and we need to have a little bit of fun. First of all, did you happen to catch last Wednesday the debut of Sports Jobs with Junior Seau on Versus?
I did not.
If anybody in the listening audience did, too, let us know. I happened to DVR it. Did you see it, Doc? It started last Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern on Versus. There were 2 half-hour shows back-to-back.
Okay.
First 2 episodes. The next one airs tonight at, I believe, 11:30 Eastern.
11:30?
Yeah, I don't know why the difference. Maybe that's the normal time. And last
week it's one of those hockey games that everybody watches on Versus, apparently.
Possibly. Versus has hockey?
Versus does have
NHL hockey?
Exactly.
Oh. So it's after that? That's probably what it is. The hockey game's the lead-in, and that's probably... All right.
But
anyway,
11:30, geez Louise.
Anyway, So his first two episodes, Seau was, the first one was he was part of the construction crew at the new Giants Stadium that they're building in East Rutherford, right next to the old one. And so he got to, you know, work for a couple of days or a few weeks or whatever. I think it's like a couple of weeks that he was there. Might have been less than that, but 3 days, I think, actually.
Which is
I keep narrowing it down, but yeah, that's a lot less than a couple of weeks. I'm confusing that with some other story. But so he goes on the job with sports-related jobs that are sort of lower level or menial kind of things to see how the sports world works for somebody who's not a big-time celebrity, but they're in the sports world. So he does these jobs. That was the first one. And then the second episode, he was a bat boy for the L.A. Dodgers. And it was during the summer, but it was later in the season. And he did all kinds of things. He did laundry for the team. They went to the supermarket and bought like $450 worth of groceries for the clubhouse for that particular game.
Oh, my goodness.
And the guy from the Dodgers who was his sort of the person he was shadowing, credit card wouldn't work, and he kept running it through, and Junior had to end up pulling out a wad of cash and paid for it himself. And it's kind of an interesting show.
Doesn't he have one coming up? He's going to be a reporter with SI or something like
that. Yeah, that's one of them. He covered the Florida Georgia game
a
few weeks ago.
Granted, his experience would be completely different than you and I, because if Seau walks into a press conference, he's kind of going to get whatever he wants to know.
Well, you would think, but he was covering the Florida-Georgia game, so that was, you know, that was this season, early. That was early while he was still with the team. Because that was October, what was the Florida-Georgia game? You know what, Doc, can you look up the schedule and when Florida played Georgia this year? Because he covered that game. He signed October 14th,
I
believe.
I was watching a Seau show.
Oh, you have it up there?
I have it on YouTube.
On YouTube? Okay. Keep YouTube up there, because there's something else I'm going to want you to look up after, too.
Is that the theme music?
Oh. Yeah, this is a clip there.
He's going up on a lift to help put insulation around the pipes at Giant Stadium.
Fine. That's not really a sports job, but, you know, I get it.
Perfect, guys.
There's Junior.
When we get it in place. Uh-huh.
He was wondering if the big genie lifts could hold his weight, and the big construction worker looks at him and goes, yeah, it can hold a lot more than 255, pal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, pretty decent show. If you have a chance to either watch it or DVR it tonight, it's on Versus 11:30. I think it's worth a look. It's kind of an interesting.
So I know if it comes on at 11:30, then I know at 10 o'clock, you'll be watching Nesson for the Shalice and Reese segment on Nesson Sports Desk.
I'll have to DVR that too, because I'm an early sleeper.
That's a catchy name,
isn't it though?
You're on with the.
I'm on with the Mike Reese.
You're on with Mikey tonight.
I am every Wednesday.
See, I'm going to have to DVR that because I can't, I'm an old man and I can't stay up that late.
I was going to say, what did I miss
here? I DVR almost every show.
So you go get like the blue plate special with the old biddies at the diner and then you're in bed by 8? Like, what is that?
No, I kind of fall asleep on the couch.
Rubbing your belly?
I've been hooked on the Olympics. I have a little something to eat. I lie down and I think, I'm just going to close my eyes during the commercial. And the next thing I know, it's 2:30 in the morning I'm still, but, so yeah, check out Sports Jobs with Junior Seau tonight. See what you think.
Halloween.
It was Halloween? Oh, so he was already with the team.
He was with the team.
He was with the team. So, Halloween was the bye week.
It was.
They came back from London. So
it
was. I was wondering how they worked that in, but that makes perfect sense. The other thing, since it is the holidays.
Yes.
A few years ago, a friend of mine and I came to the conclusion that any song in the world, whether it's a sad song, a love song, or anything, any song in the world can be made hysterical if you sing it in the voice of Frank Sinatra or Neil Diamond.
Okay.
Either one of those two.
Oh, say
That's neither one of those guys. That's me, Doc.
By the dawn.
Sorry.
You don't early have to keep playing that.
That's you?
That's me, yeah.
Woohoo!
So, Neil Diamond has always been one of my favorite just characters.
Oh, yeah, because you wanted your ringtone on my phone to be Sweet Caroline.
That's right, I did. Now, of all the songs Neil Diamond could cover, Neil Diamond's Jewish, by the way.
Okay.
So, and my friend and I who came up with this theory, he's Jewish too, and he always thought it was funny that Neil Diamond had a Christmas album that he made several years ago, and, you know, hearing him sing about Christmas and Jesus and everything, and it's just kind of ironic that he's Jewish and he's singing Christmas songs.
But he likes money, so.
Well, he does, and he's got a lot of it. So we were down in Miami this weekend. Mm-hmm. We got there Saturday night and got to the hotel room, turned the TV on, and watch the end of whatever game was. I think it was the SEC championship game. And a commercial comes on for a Cherry Cherry Christmas, the definitive Neil Diamond Christmas album for $11.99 or whatever the hell the price was. You know, it just came out. It's a brand new album. First of all, I have no idea what a Cherry Cherry Christmas is.
Yeah, what the heck is that?
But, and Doc, you're going to need to help us out with this one. I told my friend about this. I called him. I left him a voicemail and said, you got to find out about this album. He goes and looks it up. The last song on the album is a cover, a Neil Diamond cover of Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song.
No!
So here's the Cherry Cherry Christmas song, but...
Holly, holy holiday.
How is awesome. That not funny?
That's awesome.
I mean...
Remember when Will Ferrell played Neil Diamond on Saturday Night Live during Weekend Update and kept going, I'm Neil Diamond, damn it!
So that's the sappy, sentimental Christmas song.
Oh, my.
Now, Doc, if you Google, I don't know what you're on there, but there's if you Google Neil Diamond Cherry Cherry Christmas and click videos at the top, the video of his covering the Hanukkah song, you can play the whole song. And he sings word for word. Oh, yeah, he's got it right there. Here it is. Listen to this.
So few Hanukkah songs. So I thought we'd try this one for you. Put on your yarmulke. Here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah, at the end. Is
yeah.
Hanukkah is... The festival of lights.
It's not quite as funny.
No, you know why? Because he's singing it in a studio. He should have done this live.
Right.
They should have done, you know, a surprise to people like Adam Sandler did.
Right.
You know, like, spring this on people. They would have, this would have killed.
Yeah. But yeah, he's singing it, like, seriously.
Yeah.
And...
The only thing I could think was that...
Speaking of which, separated at birth, that we're looking at, there's TV screens in here, and they're showing Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin and Michael Felger separated at birth.
Oh, yeah,
never
I can see that a little
that
bit.
Before.
I see that a little bit.
Sorry.
Yeah, Kiffin's more talented. But, I mean, I hear this song...
Give me a break.
And I'm thinking, this is kind of like Ron Burgundy in Anchorman. Where whatever you put in the prompter, he'll read.
Right.
Remember the whole FU San Diego? I'm thinking somebody said to Neil in the recording studio, here, just read the, just sing this. And he was singing it all serious.
Yeah, this is, well, one of my favorite Christmas albums is John Denver with the Muppets. So.
I have that.
Isn't it awesome?
I love that one. I have that one, too.
The one
Oh, my God, that is funny!
It is.
Christmas
it's also pretty
is coming,
good.
The goose is getting fat.
Yeah, and Miss Piggy's...
Please put a penny in the old man's hat.
Miss Piggy, what's the song they sing? She gets all upset.
Oh, the 12 Days of Christmas when
she's
five golden rings?
Was it that one? No,
I think we're rapidly
Oh, Figgy
losing.
Pudding.
Oh, yes.
Where she thinks he said
Piggy pudding, that's right.
And the guy goes, it's made of figs. And she goes, oh, good.
And bacon.
And bacon.
What?
What's this one now?
Have you heard this?
No. I've only heard those two, Cherry Cherry and Hanukkah. More Neil Diamond, huh? That doesn't even sound like him.
It's not him.
Who is it?
Twisted Sister.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Not quite the same as Bruce Springsteen and that, that classic song he did with the E Street Band, the Christmas song, you know, that you hear all the time.
Yeah, I hate that song.
Really?
I really do. I hate his version of it, I should say.
I kind of like it.
I don't know. He sounds so, like, angry when he's singing it. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's, like, yelling it into the microphone.
Well,
all right.
I don't think he's actually ever been known as, like, a classic vocalist. So.
Nah, I know. But, well, Streets of Philadelphia? That was, I mean...
I'm not the biggest... I can name, like, five Bruce Springsteen songs. I know this is probably blasphemy to most people, but that's...
Well, you got more fan mail here.
Ooh.
from Chris, doesn't say where. I agree with the earlier listener. Shalise should be given a regular spot for your growing female audience.
Ooh.
Always enjoy the show. That's Christine, by the way, but she doesn't say where.
Thank you, Christine.
So, yeah, it is fun having you. And see, Didn't I tell you Neil Diamond, anything he sings is funny? It doesn't even have to be... It doesn't matter what he sings. It's his voice is funny.
Right.
To me, I think.
He should sing Shalice Navidad.
That's a good one. Do you sing that to you
I
to
do.
Yourself around the holidays? Is that how you sign your Christmas
it's on,
cards
it's on
when
one
you
of
send
my
it to
Christmas,
people?
It's on one of my Christmas mixes in my iPod, Feliz Navidad, but I sing Shalice Navidad.
Oh, boy.
You'll get your fill of Christmas music at the game on Sunday.
I'm sure.
You're going to be doing a lot. You're going to play. You're going to put the log up on the screen, the Yule log?
You actually missed that at the high school Super Bowls on
yes, I did.
On Saturday.
Yeah, that's
I had
we
it up
traveling.
There for that. But,
really?
If it's cold enough and snowing, you might see that. Otherwise, you won't. But the cheerleaders are wearing Santa outfits and doing Christmas music for their routines.
No
All right.
comment. Anybody who knows me knows my opinion on cheerleaders.
Webradio@patriots.com is our email address here in the playbook. 508-543-7482, the phone number. Howard from Orange, Connecticut, has several topics and
Uh-oh.
Comments that he wants to make. Four players sent home. Here's how I see this. To me, it sounds like they broke a written rule, not calling in to say going to be late, for instance, he puts in quotes. BB is all about rules and holding everyone accountable. I don't see him arbitrarily just sending a player home for being late due to weather. I know I require that if one of my direct reports is going to be late, they make a courtesy call and simply say, going to be late. It's about courtesy and respect to your employer and the rules by which corporations/organizations are built. 49 other players plus, I guess, the practice squad make it to work on time in the same weather and traffic, or if they were late, made the courtesy call to say going to be late. No one is exempt from BB's rules. This just reinforces that point, dedication and respect to their employer, the rules, and their teammates. You have anything to add to that?
I do know that at least one of the players did call to give a heads up that he'd be late. So despite that, he still got sent home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But, yeah, I think, you know, like I said, almost all of us, even in the media, were kind of late getting to where we had
I
to
was
be
late
today.
Today.
And it's understandable. And, you know, yeah, you do make that courtesy call, but, okay, if in this one, even if the other three didn't, in this one case, the player who did still got sent home.
Right.
What does that say? I mean, if you do what Howard suggested, he did.
Right.
And he exactly. still got sent home.
And he still
so
got sent home.
What do you make of that, Howard? I don't know. His second point, offense. It's not that they are predictable in their play calls. It's that they don't have a lot of variety. What happened to the slant pass when you need a short pickup? What happened to passes to the tight ends in the passing game? What happened to the off-tackle runs? Well, we addressed the tight ends thing a little bit ago. We think that they're in there for pass protection more than
right.
they are as receivers. And it's unfortunate because I think leading up to the bye week, Benjamin Watson was having probably his best season
right.
to date. And
Especially
was on pace to
so
have a career season.
So many of us were ready to write him off at training camp.
Yeah, and then and it's not like they hadn't thrown to him. I mean, it's not like he was dropping the ball like – he had in previous seasons.
Exactly.
They just weren't throwing to him or to Chris Baker
right.
nearly as often as they had been. And it's too bad because he could have been a de facto third wide receiver or at least a third threat, not just him, but Baker as well,
right.
including the tight ends in the game plan more. They haven't been doing that. But, yeah, the slant passes we don't see much of anymore. And running off tackle, I mean, I thought actually Maroney's been running pretty well lately.
Yeah, I mean, well is kind of relative. It seems like he's been
for
running
him.
Well
yeah.
for him.
Yeah, and he's done. I mean, he's gotten in the end zone. He's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can really complain about how he's played in the last month or so.
Oh, and he's as long as he's getting positive yardage, he makes it so that the opposing defense, has to be aware of the run. If they keep knocking him back, or he's really not, you know, being effective, then. The defense can totally focus on the passing game, and at least this way it helps keep defenses honest, I think, is if he's picking up, you know, an occasional 5 or 6 yarder and you know, averaging around 4, then that's, you know, that helps keep the defenses honest.
His third point, defense. No pass rush is killing the secondary. They don't even hurry the passers. They hardly get in the same zip code with any consistency. Secondary, young kids learning the game with no pass rush to aid in that learning curve. I think these kids have loads of potential. They just need some help from the pass rush. Dean Pease is as unimaginative in creating blitz packages as can be. He has the DBs play way too far off the wide receivers, no bumping them at the line of scrimmage, no press coverage. I'm at least willing to give Bill O'Brien, who is in his first year of play calling, time to learn on the job. Pease has been here too long to be as bad as he is at game planning and adjusting in-game to what the other team is showing.
I will say this. Pease may not be the one making all the play calls.
You think Bill's got more of a hand in it now?
Yes, I do.
Well, whatever the case is, I think Dean Pease gets a bad rap. Too much of a bad rap.
I agree with that. I do agree with that.
He's a good guy and a good coach. And, like I said on the previous show, I think he's, Donald Rumsfeld once said, you don't fight the war with the army you wish you had. You fight it with the one you have.
Right.
And I think that's the same case for Dean Pease. He's fighting a war with the army that he has.
Right.
If he had better players to make plays, I think people wouldn't be saying so much about him being a problem. And finally, confidence, not high at this point. Do I think they can win at least the last four? Absolutely, just not as confident as I once was. I still think Bill will get the team on the right track, which will get them the division title, but I see an early out in the playoffs regardless of what they do in the next four games. That seems to be the growing consensus among Patriot Nation.
Yeah, I mean, that's among the reporters, we're saying the same thing, that, obviously, assuming they hang on and they win the AFC East. They host a wild card team in the first round. If they get past that, personally, I'm rooting for them to somehow get into the 3 seed. So that way, if San Diego is the 2 seed, then we get to go to San Diego. Because who doesn't
like
want to go
Diego?
To San Diego? I love San Diego. So who wouldn't want to go out to San Diego for the weekend? But yeah, I mean, but if
see how it all ties in the show, it all comes back together.
If the Patriots are the 4 seed and they beat. They host the wild card game here, and then they have to go on the road. If they're 4, who's number 1? The Colts.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go back to Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yep.
You have to go back to the Colts. You have to go back to, I'm not trying to make a conspiracy theory, but it seems like every time we're there, the Patriots get called for at least one costly pass interference
mm-hmm.
call on defense. I don't think anybody could have as many pass interference calls as the Ravens did the other night, anybody who watched Monday Night Football.
I didn't see it.
They got called for... I think 5 in the game, which is like...
Really?
Yeah. They tied the record for most pass interference calls in a game.
Wow.
They got called for 5.
Were they difference-making calls, though?
Yeah. At least 2 or 3 of them led to scores.
Really?
So, and the Packers weren't exactly exempt either, because I think it was that tit-for-tat thing. They got called
mm-hmm.
for 2 or 3 as well. So it was one of the sloppier games I've seen lately. But, yeah, they're going to have to go on the road, and after what we've seen in Indianapolis the last couple of times they've been there, it doesn't really foster a lot of
yeah.
it does not foster a lot of confidence.
Well, let's see what one of our listeners thinks. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, 508-543-7482, the phone number. Marcus is in D.C., and he's inside the playbook now. What's up, Marcus?
Hey, what's going on, Eric? How you doing?
Good.
Let me first say that I agree with the rest of the listeners. Shalice is doing a phenomenal job.
Isn't she?
Thanks, Marcus.
That's
my husband's name, actually, so it must be something about that name.
Oh, okay. Well, great.
Oh, boy, Doc.
All right. So my thinking is this. I think I agree, and I think the theme of most of the listeners and writers is that Bill Belichick is just right now, he's really staying in a very small box with this team. He doesn't want to step outside of the ring. I think he thinks that this team can do very few things very well, and a lot of things just average. And he's trying to stick with the very few things. Because I was actually at the Miami game, and on the defensive side of the ball,
did you have good seats?
On the defensive side of the ball, they really ran. They ran a few blitzes, but they were all vanilla blitzes.
You know what? We were talking about this earlier, Shalice. They blitz so infrequently. I don't even remember a particular blitz.
And it was not more than one blitzer. It was generally maybe a linebacker. They blitzed Seau a couple times. But McGowan never blitzed, never a cornerback blitzed. Nothing out of the ordinary.
I'm trying to think on the sack that Banta Kane and was it Mayo who shared the sack?
Mayo and Banta Kane half the
sack. Was that on a blitz or was that just great rush by the front? I can't even remember because
yeah,
I don't remember seeing the blitz.
The back stayed in, and Mayo may have been responsible for the back. So I think it was one of those he just blitzed because
that's
back
who
stayed
his assignment
in.
Was. Yeah, yeah. See, I can't even remember a single blitz play from that game.
That was also, I mean, I remember other people commenting in the press box. They also used a 3-man rush a lot. I mean, they weren't even
rushing
with the standard 4.
Yeah,
they were rushing with 3. which if they're rushing three, then you assume the other eight guys are in coverage,
right.
That didn't work too good.
No. No, especially not with our young corners.
Where did you sit for the game? Did you have, like, a good vantage point to?
Oh, yeah, I had great seats. We were right in the 100 sections, right behind the Miami bench, so I saw everything up and close.
Did you get to see J-Lo,
too? The actual Moss touchdown was right in front of us.
Oh, so you actually basically had the same seats that we did,
because
our seats in the press box are in that corner. Randy Moss was running exactly directly at us, it seemed like. So you probably had the same seats.
Right past my section for the touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah, did you get a glimpse of J-Lo and Mark Anthony were off to our right a little bit, but they were very close to us in the
Yeah, they were showing J-Lo on the monitor a whole bunch in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
She was hooping it up. Dancing and getting all excited to see her team.
In regards to the offensive line, Mankins is just getting beat way too much. And Bill Belichick always says that we have five tackles. So if that's true, can we not move Light over to the right-hand side, push Kasher. No, I'm sorry, not Kasher's getting beat. Mankins is the right to tackle. Move Kasher out of there, get Mankins inside on guard, get Light, because Vollmer's obviously our best tackle.
I think we are going to see some changes in this offensive line, and we could see it this week. You know, we've seen Sebastian Vollmer. He missed two games now with what the team is terming a head injury, but it's a concussion.
You can read into that.
Right. It's a concussion. I would be surprised if we don't see Sebastian make a return this week, and I would be really interested to see, does Vollmer go to left tackle and does Matt Light go to right tackle? Bill Belichick's been asked about it in the past. He said that Matt could play right tackle. He didn't sound really confident about his effectiveness that he would have at that position.
But then again, they say one thing in a press conference and then something else happens.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to take, take
well,
it for
Matt
what it's
Light
worth.
Was asked about it on Friday when he was on WEEI, and he didn't sound thrilled with the possibility. I mean, obviously the guy has gone to two Pro Bowls as a left tackle and was named All Pro once at the position.
Right.
The other person
kind of looks at it as a slight if they move him over to
exactly.
To right
tackle.
Exactly.
He feels probably at this point in his career, 9 years into his career, that being moved is a slight, again, with the success that he's had. I would be interested to see if that is the move that they make and benching Kasher. No one was more stunned than me when I found out they signed Nick Kasher to a 4-year extension.
Yeah, if it doesn't get talked about a lot, but if you look at the plays that he's affected, on that first, I know I'm going to go way back. You probably don't want to go back here if you don't want to hear about it. But on the drive, the fourth and two, on the first play we ran the draw to Falk. He got beat on that play, which is why Falk didn't get any yards. Everything was closed up on the left hand side.
You're going back to the Indianapolis game?
Correct. Here? Going back to the Indianapolis
on
game.
On the final
drive,
four plays in
play.
That game. Yep. Okay.
Right. The first play was a draw to Falk.
Mm-hmm.
Vollmer had got his guy beat. Neil, I think maybe whoever it was, Conley probably, had his guy beat, and Kasher allowed his guy to slip inside and make the tackle, which is why he didn't get any yards on that first play, which, then we had the Welker play, and then, so we went that way. Then this play against Miami, it was a three-man rush, and he got beat off the line within 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And Tom throws the interception.
Robert Mathis certainly had himself a pretty good game against Kasher in the Indianapolis game.
Yeah, and Vollmer held up very well against Dwight Freeney.
I think I saw somewhere.
He acquitted himself very well.
I think Dwight Freeney told maybe Peter King that Vollmer's the best left tackle he's faced this season, which
really?
I think I heard that somewhere, which if that's true, that's high praise.
Did you, Marcus?
Yeah,
that's
good to know I'm not losing it. So
that's good.
That's high praise, I would say.
Especially coming from a player.
From Dwight Freeney, exactly.
For a rookie to have that kind of performance, it's unfortunate he got hurt and had to miss a little time because I think but the experience he has had will benefit him greatly.
The other person that I think has not been, obviously it's easy to pick on Matt Light and Nick Kasher because, that's what they're ostensibly most likely supposed to be doing, is protecting the quarterback. I think Dan Copen's been having not his best season this year either, because there's been a few times that guys have come right through the middle and gotten to Tom Brady.
Yeah, I don't think he's having his best season.
Yeah, the offensive line is really struggling this year and just don't really know why.
Well,
they're getting older.
Well, they are getting a little bit older, but I think they're in their for the most part they're in their prime. This should be the best we're seeing out of this line, and they're not quite saying that.
And again, nothing really has changed. I mean,
no.
You know, Dante Scarnecchia is still here, and
same five guys that have started for the last 4 or 5 years.
The thing that is interesting to me, Logan Mankins has made a lot of, I guess, what you would call mental errors. I mean, how many
penalties,
holding and false starts has he been called for this year?
He's one of the things I do on game days is track the penalties that are flagged, not necessarily all the ones that are accepted, but every penalty that the Patriots are flagged for, I keep track of who gets it, what it is, and all that. Mankins has 7 penalties this year. That's tied for the lead with the team, with team penalties.
Right.
They're almost all false starts.
Right.
And a couple of holdings,
which is
really surprising. Mental errors for him. But anything else, Marcus?
Yes. Lastly, I'll let you guys talk about it because I really don't know much. But in regards to this, 4 guys that got suspended. I mean, they got sent home today.
Yeah.
What seriously concerns me about the situation is mostly Adalis Thomas. It seems like he might have packed it in this season, especially after that healthy scratch. And it worries me that he may not even really try much the rest of the year, and we really need him on that other side. So I'll let you guys talk about that. I want to thank you for the time, and
sure.
Keep doing a great job.
No problem, Marcus. Thanks for the call. Well, I there's definitely been an edge to AD since that since that incident where he was a healthy scratch.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it every time he talks to the media. He throws out at least one
Ask Bill,
he has all the answers kind of thing. So there's definitely an edge to him that wasn't there before that happened. I don't want to say that he's packed it in, though. I mean, I think he's playing with a little bit of added motivation, let's say, put it diplomatically, but I wouldn't say he would be the kind of player that would pack it in.
I also think...
Would you?
No, I don't think so. I also think, I wonder... It just doesn't seem like he's being put in his best position. You know, it seems like he would be best at rushing the passer, and we haven't seen him in those situations. You know, after he came back from the benching against Tennessee, he wasn't playing that many snaps, and it was like first and second down. He wasn't playing on that third down where, if it's a passing situation, to me, you would want him in there rushing the passer, and we really haven't seen that much, and I think that's where he's most effective.
The best, and to your point, the best we've ever seen him play was at the end of the 07 season, and particularly...
When he was used at outside backer.
Yeah, when Roosevelt Colvin went on IR, and AD, who had been playing mostly inside, went to the outside. He tore it up in the playoffs, particularly in Super Bowl 42. He had his best game, I think, as a Patriot.
And even at the start of last season, before he broke his arm, I think he was playing very well in terms of getting to the passer. I think he had maybe 4 sacks at the time of when he broke his arm against Buffalo,
yeah,
I think.
I forgot exactly what it was. But, yeah, he was
Which I think is one of the things that people have overlooked. You know, in all of the big story, obviously, rightfully so, but with Tom Brady missing all of last season – everybody said, oh, he's going to be rusty.
Right.
I don't think Adalis Thomas got the same, consideration that he missed the final, what was it, 10
it was
games
November.
Of last season?
It was sometime in November he went on IR.
Yeah, he missed the last 8 or 9 games of last season, so why wouldn't
Late
he
November,
have been
yeah.
rusty for a little bit as well coming back?
Maybe. Yeah.
But.
All right, quick break, and on the other side we're going to talk to Charles Chandler from the Charlotte Observer about this weekend's game with the Panthers. We'll be right back.
Hey! Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game, 5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services NA, Bank of America NA, member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
We're back inside the playbook. I'm Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, sitting in for John Rook, who's at the White House today. We're going to have to badger him about this trip tomorrow when he gets back. He's going to be back tomorrow, right, Doc? So we'll have to talk to him about that. The other voice you hear there, that's Shalice Manzo-Young from the Providence Journal. We're going to bring in a third voice now to talk about this weekend's Patriots-Panthers game. That's Charles Chandler from the Charlotte Observer. Charles, thanks for your time and welcome inside the playbook.
Hey, good to be with you.
How you doing today?
Doing great, right?
First question we have for you, who's going to be playing quarterback this weekend for those Panthers?
I'm pretty sure you don't see Matt Moore there. Jake DeLome's finger's still broken, and you know I don't think there's any chance you're going to see him. So get ready for Matt Moore.
How much of a difference do you think that will make? I mean, considering how erratic DeLome had been playing this year, he's not the Jake DeLome we saw, for instance, in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. How much of a difference is it going to be with this this young Matt Moore kid in there?
Well, you know, Matt has four career starts now, and he's 3-1. But I don't think the brass here is jumping up and down yet at the prospects of the future for him. He's you know, he throws a really good deep ball. He's I think probably still learning in decision making. I think he's still got a ways to go with his own confidence. So we were talking to him today about a decision he made last week where they were down at the 7-yard line on 3rd-and-4, I believe, and he had a run-pass option, and the coaches wanted him to throw, and he ran it, and they basically said he wanted to make sure he got at least a field goal out of that. And, you know, it's a little surprising to hear quarterbacks say that. Usually quarterbacks get down there and they want to throw it up, and you know, I think he's mindful of his coaches are very conservative when it comes to things of that nature. But I think Matt went even further than he would have wanted. So it'll be interesting to see how he holds up there. I think you'll see him put him in a very conservative game plan where they ask him to manage the game. And if the Patriots get that passing game going, it could be a long day for Carolina.
What are they saying down there? Has there been any talk about this Patriots team and, you know, they've struggled down the stretch? I mean, obviously they're undefeated at home, but they've just had trouble closing out teams. Has anybody down there been talking about that?
Well, you know, we certainly ask about that, you know, today, and everybody's saying all the right things. That this is one of the great teams, you know, of the certainly the last decade and all that sort of thing. People even reminiscent about the Super Bowl, some of the guys who played in it. And I think they view the Patriots as a dangerous opponent this week because they have struggled some and they're back home and you got things like you know Brady sort of speaking out about his teammates, and I guess you guys today had a story up there about some folks that were asked to go home. It sounds like the coach is putting the hammer down. So I think the general feeling here is that the Patriots are probably ready to play real good.
Yeah, Charles, we woke up here in southern New England to a snowstorm, appropriate for this time of year and for the season. Obviously, there are about 3 or 4 inches on the ground, and that affected a lot of traffic and just people getting to where they had to go to work and such. It's since turned to rain, and it looks like we might have the same type of conditions possibly on Sunday for the game. So I would assume that if that happens, Carolina is going to probably turn to the Thunder and Lightning backfield more often. Tell us a little bit more about the way those guys have been playing this year.
Well, you know, I think that's been one of the bright lights. You know, this is one of the top running teams in the league again this year. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart both could start for anybody. I mean, I guarantee you, Bill Belichick would love to have either one of those guys. You know, they're just tremendous backs, and that's a pretty good run blocking offensive line. They are without Jordan Gross, who's out for the year. But you can rest assured what Carolina will want to do is to run the ball, and try to eat up a lot of clock. And you know, I think they're aware that even though they're not saying it, so I'm not saying it's coming from them, but you know, they're aware, just like everybody is, that this Patriots defense has been vulnerable this year, and so I think that's a way they'll try to attack.
And, you know, when they do throw the ball, Steve Smith still, to me, is as dangerous as a wide receiver as you're going to find in the NFL. Do you agree?
He definitely is. The problem, they had an incredibly difficult time getting him the ball. All season, I mean, his numbers are way down. There's not a lot of other options on this team to throw the ball to, and the truth of it is quarterback play here has been incredibly spotty. And it's been a very frustrating year for this guy. He's 30 years old, still in the prime, and he can pluck things. Boy, he does things in practice that blow your mind when he catches. He'll just make some amazing catches. But, I mean, there have just been throws all year long that, you know, he'd have to be Elastic Man to catch them. And it's been tough for him.
You know, we were talking earlier on the show playing the what-if game. Back in the offseason, all the talk and rumors was that Julius Peppers was going to be a Patriot. Obviously, he ended up back with Carolina. But we were saying, you know, how different would this Patriots team be now if Peppers were here and could have possibly changed some of the games that came down to one play at the end and getting pressure on the quarterback and that kind of thing. We've heard that he's been sort of touch and go this season, where there have been times where he's sort of looked like he wasn't motivated, and then other times when he looked like he was the Julius Peppers that we're used to seeing making all kinds of plays. Has that been the case? Has he been sort of has he taken plays off? Has he been temperamental this season?
I don't think I'd use the word temperamental. He started slowly. He had a good first game, even though the Panthers had a really bad game against Philadelphia, but he had a couple of games in a row where you just hardly even noticed he was out there. And but after the third game in the bye week, there were a number of things that happened. One, John Beeson, the middle linebacker, went on a radio show and basically said, you know, that he knew he needed to have a conversation with Peppers about his play. And it was sort of a surprising thing that Beeson would do it. Also, there was one of our columnists did a play-by-play, looked at every single play, and it was not a flattering review of the first three games. And Peppers came out after that and just had a really fantastic stretch, played remarkably well at Arizona, and then really had just, you know, pretty much put those first three games to rest. And then he hurt his hand, had a broken bone in his hand, and for a couple weeks was not able to start and was not able to play on running downs. And in the last couple weeks now, he's playing pretty much full time, but he's still not quite up to what he was before. But to kind of answer your question about his play, I think other than those first three games, when he's been healthy, he's been pretty good. Now, has he been the dynamo all the time? No, he's had maybe three games where he was out, you know, just a guy that you'd expect to make $1 million a game.
Do you think that he'll be with Carolina next year?
That's a really, really good question. If they, you know, they have been trying now for several years to get him signed to a long-term extension, and it has not happened. And, you know, whether they will make another run at that remains to be seen. Their other alternative would be to tag him again, and that will cost them $20 million. And, you know, I personally would be surprised to see that. And a lot of it could depend on whether John Fox is the coach or not. John Fox drafted, you know, Julius with the second pick and really thinks the world of him, loves to have a defensive end like that. But it's kind of hard to fathom that they would pluck down $20 million. You know, the best-case scenario, somebody would trade for him because the hard thing would be to think about allowing him to become a free agent and losing him for no compensation.
You mentioned the name Beeson earlier. That's a guy who, when his name is brought up to Bill Belichick, he speaks glowingly of. And I believe the Patriots had a chance at him in the draft a couple of years ago and passed up. Taking Merriweather later in that draft, but had the opportunity, I think, to at least make a move to get him. What kind of presence is he? Obviously, you mentioned that he had some words about Peppers that sort of motivated him. Has he sort of become, aside from Peppers, sort of like the face of that defense?
No doubt about it. You know, he's definitely a incredible player. Last week he had two interceptions in the red zone when Josh Freeman was getting the Bucs near the goal line. Really saved that game for Carolina last week, and he's incredible against the run. He's good in pass defense. He's a high motor guy. He's a quarterback of the defense. He's a coach of the defense, sort of on the field. You know, I would say that's his defense. I mean, even more so than Peppers. He's the guy that everything revolves around.
And obviously, the Patriots' offense is a pass first offense. Who do they have to fear in that secondary of Carolina this weekend?
Fear, that's a good word. it's a pretty solid secondary. You know, I mean, I think, you know, your corners, Chris Gamble is, you know, a really high-paid guy. He's, you know, kind of coming around. But I would call it a good, not great secondary. What you've seen this year, though, is they're getting some play out of their safeties. Charles Godfrey you know, had an interception last week. Chris Harris had one. You know, it's a very solid secondary. You know, to say that there's one particular guy there, you know, they've sort of been passing the plate around a little bit this week this season in terms of making plays.
Do you think they will look at what other teams have done in recent weeks? I mean, New Orleans and Miami both had success shutting down Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Do you think they're capable of doing that and forcing Tom Brady to look for somebody else, whether it be Sam Aiken or go into screen passes?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, I think it's definitely a good enough secondary to do that. Even there, they've got a rookie guy that plays in the nickel for them, sort of on the outside, named Captain Munnerlin. You know, if I'm the Patriots, I'd love to see a big, tall guy, Randy Moss, matched up against Munnerlin, because Munnerlin's only 5'8". But he's a tough little player. He likes to play press. And so, it's also a secondary that last week, you know, that they really were tough in the red zone. But I think they gave up four passes of 20 yards or more from Josh Freeman to Antonio Bryant. So, you know, it's a secondary that could be had as well.
Before we let you go, Charles, we've talked about all the big names, the names that most people recognize. Is there anybody on either side of the ball or even on special teams who has sort of quietly been having himself a good season this year that maybe we need to pay attention to this weekend?
I tell you, there hadn't been a whole ton of great seasons floating around. Most of them are fairly evident. I tell you, a guy to just keep an eye on, and it may be in spot play, but a guy named Terrell Sutton. I know Coach Belichick mentioned him on the conference call here with us today. He's aware of him. He's a backup
running
back.
Yeah, rookie running back, right?
Yeah, he's a kick returner. And he's a tough little kid. And he's able to make some plays. And, you know, if he gets in there, you know, just kind of keep an eye on number 22. He's a little scat back. He's not bad.
All right, good stuff. Charles Chandler from the Charlotte Observer, thanks for your time, and we'll see you up here at Gillette this Sunday.
Thanks, Charles.
Looks good. Keep the snow away.
It might be here. It might still be here.
All right, bye-bye.
Good stuff. Well, see, that's the kind of stuff you get from the people who cover the team day in and day out. Tyrell Sutton.
As
spot play and as a return man, because, you know, if
at least they have a return guy.
Well, they have somebody that they can go to consistently. Yeah, right. that's another thing we haven't touched on, which I think is a concern. Maybe not a full-blown problem, but a concern. And it was pretty evident towards the end of that Miami game was that they don't have a consistent one or two even combination of kick returners, kickoff returners. And that, you know, field position goes a long way to determining who wins and loses games in this league. And they had, by my count, at least three and probably maybe even four, but at least three different combinations of kickoff return deep guys
right.
against Miami. And the last one, Wes Welker took the kickoff.
Which shows, again, getting back to field position, he's their best returner, but he's their best offensive player as well right now. I mean,
and he's their punt returner for most cases.
Shocked me. I mean, you know, to have somebody as valuable as Wes Welker is mm-hmm. still back there taking that punishment on punt return that he takes. I mean, give him credit. He's one of the best two or three in the league, I think, his average is right now on punt return. But to have somebody that valuable to your mm-hmm. offense back there taking that pounding, and then obviously they recognize Matthew Slater's been back there. Ever since he started out, I mean, we've seen Edelman back there.
Right.
He broke his arm. We've seen Brandon Tate back there. He got hurt
right.
again.
We saw in the Miami game, we had Darius Butler
Fields
was back
the first
there.
One.
Isaiah Standback was in there as the up guy
right.
for a Slater return.
Terrence Wheatley's been the
Terrence
up guy.
Wheatley's
he
been the up guy.
One of the touchbacks.
I believe
one
he did.
Them.
Yep. And Welker. So there's at least four different combinations right there in one game.
Right.
That's troubling.
And that's
to
one
me.
Of the that's
if you don't have one guy who's consistently your guy at that spot. I mean, Ellis Hobbs, for all we made fun of him about as a coverage guy,
right.
in the secondary was a very good return.
Very
man.
Good and consistent.
Consistently,
he was
always back
guys.
There.
He
was
wasn't
one of those
guys.
Guys
whose numbers his average wasn't skewed. Like right now, Ted Ginn's number is skewed a little bit
because of those
he had
two
the
touchdowns.
200-yard
right.
returns against the Jets. No,
right.
Ellis was always getting you 26, 27, 28 yards
yes.
per return.
Yep.
And, you know, he did have a couple of touchdowns.
And
I think
he was always
a
shoestring away.
Season.
Ellis was always a shoestring away from breaking one a game,
right.
usually.
And Matthew Slater, I think it's a vision thing. I think we talked about this in the press box on Sunday, you and I. You know, he has the speed. I think it's just he doesn't see – There was one return in particular. Obviously, we're up in the press box.
He was going to the right, and he had an opening
in
the middle.
There was a big lane right down the middle of the field.
Yep.
And I don't know if that was a communication thing where they called for the coverage to be one way and he went a different way, or if he just did not see, hey, big hole down the middle of the field I should run down.
And you know, you mentioned his speed. He looked – I know it's only been 1 year, but he looked a lot faster last year in training camp when he had the ball in his hands
mm-hmm.
than he has this year. I don't know if he's – I don't think he's lost the physical ability, but I think he might be thinking too much
right.
when he does get those chances. And like you said, he's running side to side instead of
straight.
North to south.
Right.
And
I wonder too if he's another guy that's hurt because I know I saw him after the game and I saw him today in the locker room with a large ice pack on his right shoulder.
Oh really?
You know, obviously, if you want to be cranking your arms and making your legs go and stuff like that, I mean. Obviously, lots of guys are hurt at this time of year. I mean, we're 12 games into the season.
Everybody's 100%. Hurt, as Brady said today.
Right.
Everybody's
hurt.
Everybody's hurt. Everybody's losing sleep.
But if there's, you know, there's different injuries affect different positions different ways. If you're a guy who needs top-end speed or top speed and you can't use your arms and make them go with your legs, then that might affect you.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's an area that hasn't gotten much attention, and I think it's one of those under-the-radar problems, but it's there. They don't have a consistent kick return unit. Punt return, obviously, it's fine with Welker.
Right.
And kickoffs, for the most part, the coverage units, I think, are doing a fine job. But, you know, when you're getting the ball back, you want to get out to past the 30, between the 30 and the 40. You know, the average, I think, in the NFL is, what, the 26 or the 28?
Yeah, I don't think they're getting...
They're getting, you know, short of the 30 is the average.
Right.
If you can get past the 30, that's
huge. And interestingly enough, the best kick returner, and we really didn't see him that much, but Lawrence Maroney, the first kickoff of the season, he took it, 49 yards?
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen him since week one or week two. I don't know if that was...
Well,
why that was taken away from him.
I don't know, and it certainly can't be because of production, because like you said, whenever he's done it, going back to his rookie year, he's been good at it.
Right.
And, okay, if you make the argument, well, he's your starting running back, and he gets all the carries, and you're exposing him to too much.
Ellis Hobbs was a starting cornerback the entire time he was here, and they had no issue trotting him out there.
Well, that's a good point, but my point was going to be Wes Welker. Nobody takes more hits than that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's catching the ball more than anybody in the league, so he's out there on offense. He's returning punts. If you're going to make that argument, why are you putting – why not put Lawrence out there too? I mean, especially when you have the running back by committee – where you can have Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, or...
Well, you need to have a healthy committee to have...
Well, now that they do,
right.
Now that they do...
Right, they do.
You know, maybe we'll see that, when we go to practice on Friday and we get the I got one, I got two
assuming
with
we
Pepper
get
Johnson.
That.
That's true, because we didn't get to see that. We didn't get to see that last week. Why is that?
Somebody reported something they weren't supposed to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not me, but somebody else.
Do I know who this person is?
Yes, you do. Actually, it was two people. One person got very offended that they weren't included. And I know you know who that person is as well. So.
Oh, now you're going to make me. Now.
Eric.
Give me any hints? Eric. Oh, okay. That's a big hint. that's a pretty big hint. Okay. All right. We don't need to go any further.
Eric,
with that.
You're outnumbered now.
I love it.
Break.
Estrogen.
I absolutely love it.
Girl power.
There's another lady in the room.
I know.
Yes. What's going on?
This is great.
Has this ever happened before?
For me?
Like more women than...
No. Sadly.
Where's Andy when I need him?
Oh, geez. What's going on?
So how you
doing,
Christina?
Do you stand when you do radio?
I do.
That's interesting.
I do. I feel like...
restricted in a chair?
Well, no. I feel like I pay attention more when I'm standing. During the,
do
yeah,
you work standing
I concentrate.
Up?
I don't, but when I'm on the radio for some reason, I feel
lying
like...
your ass off.
It's very strange, I have to say.
I can't disagree with that. But, as we often do on the show, when John's here, we talk college football.
Okay.
And so, Christina's going to be on with Shop Talk at 5 o'clock. 4 o'clock, what am I saying?
Seems and, like 5 o'clock right now.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
It's been a long day.
It has.
It's been a long day.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Florida Gators. Well, no, that's kind of why.
That's why I'm in here.
That's kind of why I brought her in here, was because, as you know, Christina's a Florida alum and a diehard Gator fan, and you were at the SEC championship game, were you not?
I was there.
Sweet.
Yes. It was tough. Tough loss, especially because I was there last year at the SEC and then at the national championship in Miami, and... It's been all wins, and it's rough.
Yeah, you're not used to this.
Listen. There's
you can't
heart
abuse me
in college.
Until
you can cry
o'clock.
About it, okay?
Tebow
did cry. It's okay. He's a bigger man than both of you, okay?
Both of me. What do you mean? What are you getting mad at me for? Just because I told her last week that the Bama was going to win the game.
Yeah,
so
Eric,
she's been mad
Eric,
at me ever since.
Eric put it to me earlier about Bama being the better team and everything.
I was just pointing out facts was all.
You were. You had legitimate facts, and they basically proved
me
correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was.
Where were
was
you sitting?
I was sitting on about the, let's say, 25-yard line, about...
Gator side?
50 rows up. Gator side, yeah. They did divide the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Black and red on one side, orange and blue on the other. And great seats. We're in the lower deck and saw it all. I just, I think they showed up with some kind of... They're lacking energy, 100%. Like it was said from numerous people I talked to, they just seemed like they weren't all there. They didn't have it together or something was going wrong. And then... Urban Meyer goes down with, did you hear about that? He checked himself into a hospital the day after.
He did? No,
with,
I didn't.
With dehydration and exhaustion. So I think just the pressure 100% got to the team and the Gators, and they didn't show up.
See, the one thing I thought was going to help them was the fact that Florida's never had an undefeated season, right?
No, they have not gone all the way and then won.
And then won
and continued to win the championship and then on. So.
Right. So I thought that might have been the one factor that would have motivated Tebow and the rest of them to do it this year was for that, to make that goal.
But look at the Patriots. Like, it's almost like that when you get to the, you think that they're invincible. Nothing's going to stop them. Like, that is the biggest motivation ever. But sometimes it just doesn't come to fruition. Mm-hmm. It looked like the Patriots were not ready for that game. It looked like they were babies out there.
Yeah.
And it was really sad. And I was very upset about it for days. I still am.
I can tell. You almost were crying when I saw you this morning. She was begging me not to go hard on her about the.
That might have been the snow that I had to drive in on my way here. That was enough to make me cry this morning.
How long
as
did
well.
It take you to get here?
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to be happy about that. I said something to Bilo this morning.
Yeah, I mean, probably about an hour and a half it took.
Yeah, I mean, about the same thing. For yeah, me. And it normally takes me about 35 minutes.
You just not only was. There are a ton of people on the road, but those the roads weren't plowed. Like, when
right.
you did get to the free roads,
right.
yeah. there were ice, and it started to turn to slush and all that. And I'm like, I'm just going to go slow.
And Florida drivers
don't feel like dying
don't like
today.
Snow.
Yeah, Florida, yeah, you're not used to driving.
Yeah, are you guys used to it? You
yes.
still, there's no way you drive like a pro in this stuff.
Yes.
I love driving in this
I mean,
snow.
I don't go
above everything else.
I don't go 75
That's
on the highway,
lie.
But, you know.
Play that. You're lying. You're, you know what, off. Play that sound
I'm
effect. That
serious.
Is a lie.
I love driving.
You love driving, so I don't understand that concept.
There's something exciting about it because it doesn't happen often. Like, driving when it's clear is easy. You could do that with your eyes closed. And when it's raining, you know, it adds a little bit of an element. But the snow, you're always
going to die. Okay.
No, you just always have to be on your toes and
exciting.
Ready to react. And
you like
it's just
that?
More fun. Yeah, it's an,
See,
it's an adrenaline
like
rush
on
the way to work.
Basis. I drive like that, like a race car driver, when it's sunny and mm-hmm. 75. And
because that's how you drive in Florida.
That's how I drive. Yeah, that's just how it goes. But when that stuff's added to the mix, it's mm-hmm. no longer exciting. It's straight up scary to me.
Yeah. Well, especially because most other people aren't cautious. I mean, you see
yeah.
people all the time like, oh, I'm in a rush, so I'm going to drive too fast and yeah, dip in and out. And
I love the
blinker.
People this morning who were in their big SUVs with four-wheel drive, texting away on their cell phone.
That's
talking.
The
I'm
worst.
Like, with their headlights off and wipers off. I'm like, really? You're the person who's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a whole other thing. People get scared and they go super slow and that's dangerous. And then mm-hmm. people are going way too
right.
fast while texting, and that's not safe in any situation.
The thing that gets me the most upset about people who drive in this weather around here is the inexplicable driving slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying go 75 in the snow, but
that's what I've narrowed it down.
I was on 295. I was on 295, and there were three lanes of traffic, bumper to bumper, going about 30-35 miles an hour. So I'm thinking. Well, because on the other side of the highway, you had the convoy of staggered plows
right.
getting the clearing the road off. So I'm thinking, well, maybe that's what's going on. But then I kept looking down at the road,
and the
road below us was still snowy.
Right.
So there clearly weren't plows there, but
Someone
all three lanes.
Someone puts it along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the trucks, too. There's
yeah.
always trucks on the road. I guess they're coming from the poor area.
18-wheelers and
like,
stuff?
Yeah.
yeah.
And I got blinded a couple times this morning where you get up next to one of them and I'm like,
and
okay,
then,
I'm
going
to gun it to pass them. But you yeah. get like, you can't see out of your windshield for 2 seconds.
Right.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's almost like the
Come
18-wheelers were shooting out slush
yeah, they
today.
Yeah.
They were shooting, like just as you get near it, all of a sudden,
Sounds like a
your
video game
was,
we're talking about.
Yeah. So anyway, we hope we cheered you up a little bit.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, it's a shame, but
So you're playing
Cincinnati in the
Sugar
Bowl.
You're going to go to the Sugar?
I don't know.
It's New Year's Day.
I don't think, I mean, I probably most likely will be here. And I don't know if I want to do that. I've been to the Sugar Bowl
Yeah. You
before.
Don't want to see them lose again? Another undefeated team.
Oh, now you're going to start with the fighting words. Okay. Well, what do you think? You think that's what kind of matchup is that?
I think Cincinnati has proven they can score on pretty much anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Florida losing two games in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. You're letting him. His school doesn't even have football anymore.
Who asked you?
I'm
Wait,
just saying. I'm
who asked you?
I'm sticking up
that
for
is
the other girl.
No, see, this
I'm
is.
I'm sticking up for the other girl in the room.
Yeah, that's so. You know all these people. Brian Lowe gives me crap. He went to Brandeis.
Almost
yeah,
had a chance at a third. You don't even have football.
Nobody was talking
I mean,
to you.
I mean, my school sucks at football
oh,
right
well,
now,
well, wait a
too,
second,
but.
Though, but Eric did play for that team.
Eric did, and I'm sure then they were great. And that, actually,
yeah,
you know
okay,
what?
So let's
Maybe
look at...
Maybe that's why they got rid of it.
Let's look at this logically. I played for a team. They decided to cancel the program. I came to this organization. They've done nothing but lose the Super Bowl every year. I'm cursed.
So maybe Bill's wrong.
Maybe he is.
Eric
maybe
should be
made.
Released.
Maybe.
Oh, jeez.
All right, stick around. Christina's up next with Shop Talk, and we'll see you back here on the Playbook tomorrow at 2. Thanks to Shalice Manza-Young.
Thanks, Eric.
From the Providence Journal for joining us today. Christina, cheer up, little kid. You're going
to
be all right.
I'm trying to smile.
You're going to be all right.
I am.
If my friend my own, okay. listening, I want to say hi to my friend Sam in California.
I just want to say one last thing before we go. I'm glad my prediction was right that Alabama beat Florida, but I'm very disappointed because I wanted to see John Rook lose to you and wear your University of Florida cheerleading
with
outfit.
With the pom-poms
yeah.
all together, yeah.
So did I.
Yeah,
you know,
we were looking forward to that.
That's my greatest disappointment.
Well, I'm glad you guys are enjoying the disappointment as well. What's that?
He could fit in your cheerleading
No, that's why I wanted to. That's why I think it would have been funny
you're
to see
You're going
to
attempt it.
He is little.
she's petite.
I just wanted to hear. I just wanted to hear Rook sing the Florida fight song with his Texas accent.
That would have been fun.
All right, Christina's up next. Stick around.